Hi, I'm Carlisle Hasham, and this is Carlisle's Chesapeake. In 1865, on June 19th, in Galveston, Texas, the last slaves were freed. We are podcasting an episode of Carlisle's Chesapeake on the 19th of each month in 2019, starting with Dr. Mark Leone as our guest, to bring to you the historical journeys of Black Americans. So let me introduce you to Mark. Mark is an anthropology professor here in College Park at the University of Maryland. He has done extensive work in Easton, Maryland. Prior to Easton, he worked with archaeology in Annapolis. So Mark, tell us about your work in Easton.
Yes, certainly, it's a pleasure. In 2000, my project, Archaeology in Annapolis, was invited from Annapolis to work on White Island, on William Paca's late 18th century plantation. And while we were there, the owner of Paca's property, Diane Brenzel, wanted to know what had happened to the African Americans who were well known to live on White Island. We couldn't find an answer until we looked in Easton, Maryland. And the most important place we explored archaeologically in Easton was at White House, which is just a few miles beyond Easton, where we excavated the slave quarters, well described by Frederick Douglass, who was a young boy and a slave there. And our excavations there led us quite immediately to Unionville, founded by former slaves, freed people, right after the Civil War. And Unionville is outside Easton. And then subsequently we began to excavate in Easton itself, because there was a community of freed people there in Easton, in a place called The Hill, by 1790 and probably before. We say 1790 because that's when the first federal census occurred, and that recorded almost 500 free people living in Talbot County, and many of those people lived in Easton. Our job, as defined by our partnership with Dale Green, who's at Morgan State University and with whom we have a partnership, was to demonstrate how old the community in Easton actually was. And we found that it predates 1790, which we expected, but that makes it, that makes the Hill community one of the oldest free communities in the United States. And we're happy to say the archaeology actually demonstrates its age to at least the late 18th century.
There are homes on the hill that you can walk us through, perhaps, to explain what you the findings that you have found there in your digs.
Yeah, that's our pleasure. We've spent seven excavation seasons, mostly summers, in at least six different places on the hill. And our most recent excavations on the Freeman property, which is on Talbot Lane in the southern part of Easton. And that's where we think the hill begins. And the Freemans were free people who owned a fair amount of property, that is to say an urban farm. They sublet, subsold, subdivided their property. And one of the places that we excavated is their kitchen garden. And we found beds with material in them, that is to say broken ceramics, which we can date from the late 18th century. But beyond that, we excavated the parsonage of Bethel, AME Church. We excavated the tabernacle, torn down now, from Asbury, ME Church, Methodist Episcopal, as opposed to African Methodist Episcopal, which is Bethel. We excavated the land that is now owned by the Women's Club, also on Talbot Lane. And that, at least the backyard, had a freestanding kitchen used by African Americans, free people. So that's the kind of thing we've done. What we find is the broken dishes, pots, pans, and leftover lost toys, food remains, and so forth, left behind by these folks. And that's standard archaeological, stuff, let's just say. And our job, actually Tracy Jenkins' job, my doctoral student, who will do this for his dissertation, is to put the life back together of these folks. So the first thing we did was to establish age. And so we know the Hill community dates at least to the late 18th century archaeologically, although the census already demonstrated that. We'll probably show chronologically it's a little bit earlier. Then what we also did was to discover on the surface wonderful, wonderful African-American gardens. There are 6, 7, 8, or 9 of these in Easton. And these are standing there right now, and they don't need to be excavated. We did discover this, but we discovered it in a way that is not very different from what the African Americans who built them actually know, and their neighbors who are not African Americans already understand, which is to say these are gardens that look a little bit different. They have different purposes, and while they are gardens, they can be used to establish lessons for people in the African-American community. They commemorate dead relatives. They invoke spirits. They do a lot of different things, but they aren't for growing tomatoes, and they aren't for growing lawns, and they have many other purposes from what, let's say, the normal white folks' garden and lawn would do. Perhaps our most important set of excavations was at the home of the family of the Buffalo Soldier, now being completely, let's say, restored. It's in the heart of Easton, a stone's throw from Asbury ME, and there we discovered lots of wonderful stuff. We discovered marbles, we discovered buttons, and so I'm going to tell you about marbles. Marbles are utterly silly, useless on the surface. But here's what we discovered, because we always open our excavations to neighbors, and we've done that for 30 years, beginning in Annapolis. So the neighbors came and said, let us tell you about our game of marbles. And let us tell you about how all this stuff was really used. So marbles led to playing cowboys and Indians, and our white folks kids playing with black kids said, no, black kids cannot be anything but Indians. Cowboys have to be white. And one black kid went home and was told that the Buffalo Soldier proved otherwise. The Buffalo Soldier who lived in this house, the family of the Buffalo Soldier, a guy named Cardner, who was a Buffalo Soldier, was an African American. And African American soldiers after the Civil War were called Buffalo Soldiers because their job was to mind Native Americans, were soldiers. And so the kid came back and said, our relatives were indeed soldiers, so I don't just have to be an Indian. I can be a white soldier too. So we understood that there's a certain serious racist component in child play and the cure for racism in the early 20th century was the invocation of the fact that African Americans were indeed members of the US military and had the stature accorded any other federal employee who was a soldier. Mark, so we did that sort of stuff.
Excuse me for a second, but I want to interject here about Frederick Douglass, because Frederick Douglass is from Talbot County, which is where the Easton is the seat of. And he was insistent in the slaves being freed. And I mean, this is Carlyle's rendition, but that they should be allowed to, since they fought in the Civil War, they should be American citizens. So this and what you were saying is, in my mind, it ties in with what you just said.
Yes, it's an echo of what Douglass said. In addition to your quote, Douglass pointed out that all you had to do was to make an African-American an American soldier, and he was going to be as brave and loyal, and maybe braver and more loyal than anybody else. And that's what the Buffalo Soldiers proved. They were as good as anybody else in uniform, as loyal, as faithful, and as good a soldier.
And Unionville, just outside of Easton, which you talked about a minute ago, that land was deeded to African-American Civil War soldiers to come back after their fighting and settle there and own land, which was pretty unheard of at the time, wasn't it?
Yes, there were really two issues here. How did these African-Americans, how did African-Americans who were once enslaved become free? And there are two stories, and they don't conflict, but one never gets told. The one that gets told is that in the heat of freedom and the free and the Declaration of Independence and American freedom from Britain, Quakers prominent in Easton and Methodists prominent in Easton had a debate, each among their own co-religionists, about slavery. And many members of both religious congregations said that slavery was immoral and unchristian and freed their slaves. And that is one of the two stories about how freedom began. The one not so frequently told, but is true in Easton, is that African Americans freed themselves. They didn't free themselves by walking away. They freed themselves by buying their freedom from masters who named a price, often a variable price. So the second story is African Americans freed themselves. They just weren't freed by some others who broke the bonds of bondage. And that is clearly what the Freemans did. And that's one of the reasons we're digging their property. They sold land to their brethren, and the purpose of that land was to allow other free African Americans to sustain themselves permanently. And the function of the Hill today is to understand this is not a community of renters, this is not a community of seekers, this is not a community of clients, this is a free community, and it always has been. And one of the things you can see about Easton is that it is filled with small business people. Now, this isn't what you can see archaeologically, but it is filled with people who ran their own businesses, particularly on Dover Street. They ran beauty shops, bridal shops, bakeries, a theater a little bit further in the hill. They owned these. They didn't just manage them, they owned them. And so it was a self-sustaining free community. So it begins with farms, but it includes businesses as well. So what you see is later, what Du Bois says and what Booker T. Washington says, the best way to maintain freedom is to own your business and to be free and to create the vehicles where we patronize each other so we can stay free and sustain ourselves as a community, demonstrating both to the larger nation and to ourselves that we don't have to be dependent.
So Mark, this has been a brilliant conversation to start off our series about Black American history in the United States. And I want to thank you for enlightening us with your findings. To our listeners, please stay tuned for more episodes on Carlisle's Chesapeake, which you can find on our website, carlislechesapeake.com. Thanks for listening.